You become a parent and your priorities change. Being home for bath time and cuddling up with a story often feels much more important than anything you could do out on the town. Suddenly, the thing you look forward to most in the world is watching this precious little person grow and develop into whoever it is they will be. How would your life as a parent be different if you didn't have the luxury of taking for granted that you'd get to be there for all of that? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Last year, Jonathan Charks suffered through many weeks of fevers, exhaustion, dehydration, severe pain in his back and muscles before anybody could figure out what was going wrong. He was 33 at the time, had always been healthy, but the diagnosis was a bad one. He had a rare and aggressive cancer called Ewing's sarcoma, and it had spread throughout his body. His little boy was just a year old then. And since that time, Charks has been thinking not only about what he can do to stay around for as long as possible, but also about who might step up to love and care for and really see this child through the years ahead. Charks is a staff writer at The Ringer, where you can read his essays, including the one titled, Does My Son Know You? John, welcome to Think.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just want to say it's a great thrill. I grew up listening to NPR, like in the mornings and in the car. Like All Things Considered morning edition. So it's fun to be on here.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And we always love hearing about those backseat kids that continue to love NPR. So glad to know that. When you first got sick, it took a long time for anybody to figure out what was happening with your body. What was that time like when you felt really terrible, but you weren't able to get any answers about what the problem was?
I think it was very frustrating. It was kind of eye-opening because, you know, when your experience with the medical world is like mediated by television, and you know, like television's fake, obviously, but at the same time, when you don't have much other experience to go on, it kind of seeps into the back of your brain a little bit, and you just kind of expect people to have the answers, and then when they don't, it's just like very frustrating and scary, and it's just kind of like, oh, actually, the world is more complicated than this 40 minutes of TV that I've seen it through sometimes.
Was cancer even on your radar screen, or did each test come back negative and you'd say, well, at least we know it's not cancer so far?
Yeah, not really, because as I was getting, it was during COVID. Yeah. And so everyone was kind of so focused on COVID, me included. And then they just kind of figured, because I had gotten COVID like right before my cancer symptoms really started to escalate. So when those symptoms escalated, they thought it was something to do with long COVID because it was just so new back then and no one really knew anything. So it was always kind of in that realm until like the very end when they said, because they did some initial cancer screenings, said no. So everything was just so COVID, COVID, COVID. And then towards the very end, they're like, well, nothing's working. Let's just go into like the deep end of the cancer stuff, the really rare cancers. Really no one ever gets. And the interesting thing is I've actually talked to several people who had a similar experience with rare cancer last year, where everything rare and unusual was kind of put into the COVID bucket at first.
And your case is like 25 million to one?
Yeah. So I got that number from a researcher that much later down the road who kind of specialized in my type of cancer, because it's a genetic situation where some genes were switched multiple times, and that switching causes the exact breakdown of things that leads to my cancer. And then the odds of those switchings happening are about 25 million to one. And that's why it took them so long to figure this out, because who expects 25 million to one even as a doctor, right? It's not something you're thinking is going to happen.
So as bad as this diagnosis is, it at least gave you some answers, which meant you could pursue treatment. What toll has that treatment taken on you?
It's been really hard. I mean, chemo is difficult. Because chemo itself, there's many kinds of chemo. I mean, I didn't really quite know that before I got started in terms of the different types you can take. And then just the way it just changes your life, the structure of your life when you're going into chemo. I was doing it for like the last year, like every third week for 5 days. And so then like you have your normal life, then you put it on hold for chemo, we call it chemo weeks. Just trying to get through the chemo week. And then you get back to normal. And then how chemo works is right when you fully recovered from the chemo, they give you more chemo. So it's like this never ending cycle.
Has it been helping?
Unfortunately, it not enough. So I'm actually taking a leave from work because the normal chemo methods haven't worked enough for me to get me into remission. And now I'm moving towards more into the experimental types of treatments, and we'll see.
So there are other answers you'd like to have. You have a diagnosis, but there are other answers that people can't give you. Like, unlike again in TV or the movies, no one's able to say, do this treatment and you will be better in X amount of months or you will live this amount of years. How are you learning to live with not knowing?
Yeah, I mean, it's the hardest part. And that's the part where I'm always reminded that nobody knows, you know, right? We all have this idea in our heads of how long we're going to live or we expect to live. But of course, no one knows. No one knows when their time is going to come. And I think for me, the interesting part of this experience for me is like, in a way, it's been a blessing because I think about the people. And who I've known, who I'm 34 now, who passed away, like from my high school or college, it was always very unexpected, you know, just all of a sudden they just, a car accident, something like that happens and they're gone. Whereas for me, it's like, at least I've had the ability to kind of take a step back and like take stock of my life and try to figure out what I want, like how I want to use the rest of my time because I have. In the back of my mind, I've known like I have to count the time now because I don't know how much more time I'm going to have.
So you're also a relatively new dad, which is an exciting time in life. I mean, your son is about 2 now, which is like a really fun age, right? What kind of stuff is he into?
Oh, it's a great age. Everyone was telling me about the terrible twos, and I'm like, well, he just turned two. Don't put that on me yet. Like, 'cause right now it's fun 'cause he's like in between. He's really mobile, but he's not, and he's independent and he can do his own thing, but he also just listens. He doesn't even know he could say no, really. So it's a great mix of times right now. Right now he just loves cars. He loves trucks. We were laughing because the other day we're walking him home on a stroller and an ice cream truck rolls by. And you know, for most kids, it's the ice cream, but for Jackson, it's just the fact that it's a truck. That's just so exciting. And he's just looking at it like, tuck, tuck. Like he calls them tucks. Like that's always this age too, they have their own unique pronunciations on things that are just, it's just so much fun. Like he calls water ga-ga-ga. It's like, oh, I need some, he goes ga-ga-ga, ga-ga-ga. And it's just like, that's so clever. Like I love it.
It's funny because, yeah, if you get a babysitter, you have to give them this glossary of words that you and your spouse know that no one else could possibly interpret.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone has their own little language until they're like three or four, I guess.
So you're thinking about what the future might look like for him. Is your cancer something you've tried to help him understand at all, or something you've tried deliberately to kind of keep out of your relationship with him?
I just think we've thought about it, and like I think our goal as he gets older is to just incorporate it naturally into our lives. In terms of like, we don't want to have to ever sit him down, like, all right, after dinner one night, now we have to talk about a certain situation. We want it to be a very natural, ongoing conversation. I think right now he's still a little too young to talk about, just to have deeper conversations generally, to understand much beyond like what's going to happen today or when lunch is going to be, or when it's time to go to bed. Like, those are the conversations we have right now. So, I just think we're not quite to the point yet where we can really talk about it. But when we do, we want it to be as natural as possible so it's not jarring for
You were one of those people who always knew that you'd want to be a parent.
him. Yeah, and I think that's something I talked a lot about in my piece and kind of how I've viewed this whole situation. So, for me, my story. My father had Parkinson's when I was 6, and that was always kind of hanging over our family as I was growing up. And I didn't get to have a lot of the experiences with my dad that a lot of my friends did. And so there was just a very deep need in my heart. I always wanted to kind of, I always felt like, oh, if I can't be a son, maybe I can be a dad. And kind of, I think not in always the healthiest way either. But like I always kind of wanted to replicate that experience on the other end or to kind of capture what I lost on the other side. So it was always like a deep, deep need of my heart for sure.
It's occurred to me that when people who are thinking about their own death want to talk about it, whether that's sort of in the abstract future somewhere, maybe people are getting older or they've been diagnosed with a serious illness, often the people who love them most are like, oh, no, no, don't talk about that. We, you know, you're not going to die. And I wonder sometimes, you know, on the one hand, they're telling you we can't imagine things without you and we need you and therefore you must live a full life. I wonder if you also need to hear from people that they'll be okay if your body fails you in that.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, me and my wife talk about this a lot. It's tough to find that balance because the hope is often the hardest part. It's like hoping, and then every time your hope is delayed or not fulfilled, it's just so devastating. Like when you're hoping for a cure, when you're hoping for a breakthrough, and you're putting your hope in that. And so then in a lot of ways, it's easier to not hope, to kind of accept. And there's peace in that, but it's like you're trying to have that balance of having peace to your situation and peace with whatever happens while maintaining your hope that like something miraculous things do happen. And it's very hard to find that balance, I think, for you and the people around you.
What would count as a miracle for you? Besides, I mean, the obvious miracle is somebody finding a cure and this is all water under the bridge. What else do you think of as a potential miracle for you?
Well, I mean, the thing that's crazy, and when you're in the weeds of this stuff, is how there's so many things that medical science can't understand. And like, there have been people in my condition, like they never found a cure and their disease just went away. And no one knows why. I'll never forget, I asked my doctor one time, and we're talking about that kind of stuff. And I asked him, well, is there anything, what are the common factors where people, these things have happened to? Like, what, do I have some of these factors? Do I have some of these things that might predict that kind of somewhat miraculous outcome could happen to me? And then he just said, you know, I wish I could tell you. He said, I'm not the one who decides these things. And it's just like, yeah, that's kind of going back to some of a lack of control. Like, I don't know. It just happens sometimes and they don't know why.
How do you feel physically day to day?
It's weird. It just depends. A lot of it depends on where I am in my chemo schedule. So like for me, the chemotherapy, even though it has not gotten rid of the disease, it keeps it down, prevents it from progressing. So right now I'm cycling between treatments. And so between treatments of chemo, I can feel the onset of the cancer stronger and stronger. But then like for me right now, I'm supposed to start a chemo treatment, a new one at the end of this week, the next couple of days. So right now I'm not feeling great because I'm feeling the cancer rise. But when I'm on the chemo, it's a weird thing because like there's stuff for chemo where you feel bad, and there's stuff for cancer where you feel bad. And it's almost like you're picking one or the other.
Have you learned to kind of psych yourself up for one phase or the other?
I think what it comes down to, the best you can, is trying to find peace. And this has been like one of the hardest challenges too, is like, how can I find emotional peace when I don't feel physical peace? When my body doesn't feel good, how do I get to a good place emotionally? How do I not let the physical condition impact my emotional well-being? And that's obviously very difficult, but that's something I've been like trying as best I can to uncouple, because as we've been talking about there, I have no real control over my physical condition, but my emotional condition I have some control over.
So who are the people you've thought about who might be there for your son and your wife if you are not able to be there?
Yeah, I mean, just friends, mainly friends from church, even some friends from just like before, from growing up, just close friends. And I talk about it a lot in my piece because I think I kind of have a unique perspective on it, given that my dad was sick for most of my childhood, was not really able physically or mentally to be there. And what I saw firsthand was how, as someone gets sicker and sicker, he had to retire. He was no longer able to be active. His social support shrunk and shrunk and shrunk because he wasn't there. Kind of what we were talking about before about like maintaining relationships. He no longer had the capacity to maintain those relationships. And so I think for me, remembering back on my childhood, it's like I don't want Jackson, my son, to have the same kind of childhood I did. There are so many things where I wish there were more people in my life, more older men who could have still filled in for my dad and done some of the things, even stuff as simple as going to ball games or playing hoop, shooting hoops outside, or, maybe talking about girls and how to navigate that whole thing. I didn't really have that. And I so as best I can the last year, I've tried to like identify the friends who I like believe in. And it's like I'm giving you this like there's no other way to frame it, but this is the ultimate favor I can ask of you. Because when you're sick like me, everyone comes out of the woodwork and they say, "Oh, I want to be there for you. I'll do anything for you. My heart breaks for you." And I know how these things go. Like when someone's really sick, that's the initial response. But then as time goes on, it's like it just starts to go away because people have their own lives, people get busy at work, they have kids of their own, they move, and all of a sudden it's like those relationships, like all those people who were there at the funeral, they wither and they go away. And as best I can, I've been trying to like I want to have people I want, like people I just like, I can't control what's going to happen, but like, I want these people to be in my son's life. And as best I can, I want to try to, from my end, all I can really do is invest in these people now and hope they can pay it forward if I'm gone.
Have you asked them directly?
Yes. It's very, it's not a conversation you ever want to have as a man, I can tell you that, but it's very powerful conversation. It's very, like, hey, this is as real as it gets right now. I have to ask you these questions. I'm just going to ask you for your help, your responsibility, your commitment to be there because I need someone in my stead to do it.
How, I mean, I would imagine when your dad was sick, your mom also had a lot of extra responsibilities. Were there ways in which you felt she wasn't as able to be there for you because she was also caring for him?
Oh, that's a tough question. That's a really tough question. I think what I look back on now is just, and one thing it's what happens is with when you're a child, like you're just naturally selfish. Everything's about you. It's just part of growing up. It's kind of what Paul was talking about when he says, when I grew up, I had to give up childish things. But when you're a child, you make everything about yourself. You take things very personally. And it's like, I know for me, I was like, I really had a very tough relationship with my dad because it was like, well, why weren't you there for me? And you kind of make it about yourself. I guess must mean something about me that you weren't there for me when he had no control over that. I think about that with my mom too. It's like, I know now all the responsibilities she had, all the work she had to put in to take care of my dad, be the sole provider and the sole parent and the sole caretaker. It's a lot. I mean, it's like, it's a cliche, but it's true. You never know what your parents had to do for you until you become a parent.
Oh,
And
totally.
then, right? And you look back and you're like, man, there was so much on her plate growing up. And you're just like, man, I wish I had at the time done a better job of being understanding and empathetic, but I was just a kid. I couldn't.
I think you also never know how much they loved you until you have your own child.
Yes, for sure. I mean, that's what they say in the church, and it's true. It's like you don't know, it's hard to know God's love for you until you have your own kid. And then it's like, oh yeah, of course I'll forgive my kid for anything. It's my child.
Christianity does not teach, most forms of Christianity do not teach that, loving God the best, being the best person means that you get all these material rewards on earth or, good health or anything else. But I wonder, there are those people who seem to believe that if your faith is strong enough, you can sort of have what you want. Do you have to just shut out that way of thinking?
Yes, and it's very difficult because it's so natural, right? It's such a more intuitive way of looking at the world, right? Like good things are rewarded. And in a way, it's like you wish the world was like that, It would make the world make a lot more sense if good people, quote unquote, good people were rewarded and bad people were punished. And there is that to an extent, but I mean, you just watch the news for 5 minutes and that's not the case. And I think for sure. And then when stuff really, there's always a part of you that, like, okay, I've been a good person in my head, at least. Like, I've done the things God has asked of me best I can, more or less. Surely good things will come to me. And then it's easy to fall into that trap. And then, it's like when bad things happen to you, and you're like, well, what's going on, God? Like, what happened? What happened to this bargain that, and maybe only stood in my mind, but happened? And then you just have to ask yourself a lot of really tough questions about, like, why do like things happen? Why are things not fair in this world? Why do some folks get things more than others? I mean, why do some folks have their parents around till they're 80 and some folks lose them at 5? And it's just tough. I mean, it's tough. These are tough questions. These are the questions, and it's easy to have pat answers to them when you're not going through it. Very, very easy. Well, but then when you actually have to like live through it, those answers, they don't seem quite as satisfying anymore.
You haven't really written about this, and so if you don't want to talk about it, it's fine. But I'm curious about the way your illness has shaped your relationship to your wife.
Oh, I mean, it's been tough. I mean, it's really hard. It's been good in a way, but it's challenging in a lot of ways. I mean, number one, I'm just so grateful for the way that she's been there for me. And this shocked me, but maybe it's not shocking, I don't know. But there's a lot of people who get divorced after something like this happens. Like, that
Wow.
happens very frequently. And I get it because it's so overwhelming to be on the other side to be a spouse. And I think so much of like spout the role spouses play in these things, and they're always kind of the forgotten element of it, but they're going through it too, even worse. But it's always like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And it's very easy for the spouse to kind of be overlooked and kind of forgotten, and her suffering and her trials through it. And it's like, yeah, like for me, this story might have an end, and that's it for me. But then she has a whole life ahead of her with my son, and it's hard. Like, I think in a lot of ways, my road is easier than her road. And I try to remember that when I feel too sorry for myself.
Are you thinking about leaving some kind of written record for your son of who you are, what you believe, what you want for him, what you want for yourself?
100 for sure. And that's like what I've been focusing. I'm actually taking a break right now from work to do that. And I've been kind of like trying to figure out what that looks like. And what does my son want to know about me? Like, what do I want to tell my son? These are like the questions you never think you have to ever ask yourself. And I think what I've kind of come down to, because my initial thought was like, there's just so many things I want to tell him about the world, like my opinions. Here's how you should think about X. Here's how you should do X. And then I think at some point as I started this process, I realized he's gonna have to like figure so much of that out on his own. That's just part of life. And what I can really give him are my experiences. Hey, here's why I think this about X or Y. Here are the experiences I've had that inform my perspective. And hopefully these experiences, you can maybe draw some lessons from them yourself, because I think it's so much more powerful when, like, the old rule of thumb, right, in creative is show, don't tell. So it's like, let me not just tell my son what I think about dating. Let me show him my experiences with dating and the lessons I drew from them. And I'm hoping that has more power for him. And ultimately, like, I just want him to know me. That's what everyone wants. And that's what I think. I wish I knew more about my dad. I'd love to hear my dad's takes on, Ronald Reagan, but really, I just want to know. I wish I could have known him better.
Yeah, you write about discovering that he received like a trophy. He was really into tennis, I guess, but before he got sick. And these weren't things you had really known much about because you were so young when he got sick.
Yeah, I mean, there's just this whole world he had. I mean, he had me fairly late in life. I think he was in his late 40s. And yeah, he just had so many lives he led before he was even a dad. And I think for me, I just wish I could have known more about them. I think that's like the hardest part sometimes, just to not know. Just I want to know yourself, I want to know your parents. Like, I want to know where I came from, know my story. And that's what I want to give my son as best I can. Like, these are my experiences in life, and I hope you can learn something from them. I hope you can just, I want you to know me as best I can tell you from where we are in our lives right now.
The 2-year-olds are remarkable little human beings. They can also be incredibly exasperating. And I wonder if you think your responses to your son when he's difficult to care for are different in light of your cancer than they would have been otherwise?
What's funny is there's just sometimes where I get the simplest things and you just kind of like break down and start crying. You think, man, I don't know if I'll be there for all these things when he gets older. But he just thinks I'm laughing. Like, he thinks it's just funny. He's like, oh, you're laughing too. And I'm like, yeah, we'll go with that.
I mean, you have to, I'm sure you have to let yourself cry sometimes. I wonder if you've learned how to compartmentalize or if you don't even try to control that. It's just, this is how your life is now.
It's weird, but it'll come at you at the blue is what happens. It's like, all of a sudden it's like, cause you can't, you don't live your whole life feeling sad. It's impossible on some level. It's like deep, deep, deep sadness for the most part. So it'll just hit you randomly for like 5 minutes. And then it's like waves and it just passes. And then you're going about your day and then boom, just like a deep bit of sadness just hits you. And that's kind of, you never quite know what's going to trigger it. Cause there's just so many little things that can. I think like on a day-to-day basis, like I feel a lot of peace. I still try to have fun and have happy moments, but then all of a sudden just like, bam. And you just kind of like, just cut to the core for like 5 minutes.
I mean, what's happening to you, there's no other way to say it. It's just inherently unfair, right? There's nothing you did to deserve this. There's nothing somebody else did to not deserve it. I mean, I wonder if you have to kind of learn to let go of, all of us are trying to find a reason for things in our lives. And there's no good reason for this, right?
Yes, that, I mean, I talk about that a lot with my wife. I remember because in college and stuff, I smoked a lot. Like an idiot. And I would just tell her, I really, part of me wishes I had like lung cancer right now. Cause if I had lung cancer, I could say, well, you know what? This was my decision. Like my actions led to this result and I have no one to blame but myself, but at least I can blame someone for what happened. But the fact that it's like this genetic thing that just random flu chance for sure. It's like, I think what I've come down to is like, there's three ways to look at this kind of stuff. Either one, like random things just happen in this world for no apparent reason, good or bad. God shines his light on the righteous, unrighteous alike. And it just is what it is. And who knows, it's the luck of the draw. That's one possibility. The second possibility is kind of before like the prosperity gospel in terms of good things happen to good people. And then like blessings are bestowed for righteous actions, righteous conduct. And then punishments are bestowed for unrighteous conduct. And then number three, which is the weirdest of all, is that in some way, these kinds of experiences are actually blessings from God. And that the fact that I'm going through this right now is actually a way for me to grow closer to God, to know him better, and to understand my place in eternity, and to refocus my perspective on what really matters. And I've been trying to like lean on that third perspective as best I can, even though it is so like wildly counterintuitive.
Hmm. I mean, everybody plans for the future, you know, your future, you may be there to witness some of the things you think about, you may not. I wonder, like, if it's too hard to go to your son's high school graduation, the day he gets his PhD, the day he marries someone, do you allow yourself to think about those things or do you try to, like, focus on the two-year-old that he is today?
Oof. I think that's been one of the hardest parts. I think that's been one of the hardest parts of this process because for when I first got sick, I think I had focused so much because of my childhood on all the things he would miss out on if I was not around in terms of not having a dad. But then it's only been recently that I've allowed myself to kind of mourn the other way. It's like, yeah, he has his things, but I'm missing out too. And that's like the hardest part is to think, man, all those joys of being a father, I might not be there for. And to die to those dreams of like, maybe I won't be able to see him walk, as you kind of said, walk across graduation or be at his wedding or see his kids one day. And I mean, that's really painful, but I have to always remind myself, like, it's not promised for anyone. I mean, anyone at any time in this world as it is right now. And so, yeah, I just, as best I can, I try to live in the moment.
You believe in heaven?
Yes.
Any thoughts on what that will be like?
I'm not, I mean, I'm not sure. I spent more time thinking about it lately. I do know this. I think in the Bible, Christians sometimes you have this idea of heaven as a far off place in the clouds, in the skies with harps playing. But if you actually read Revelations and read the Bible, it says, no, heaven's coming back to earth. Like heaven, New Jerusalem will be on this planet. We will have eternal bodies will be on this planet, this world. You know, I've seen some of the world, but I have not seen that much of it traveling. But I do believe if I'm going away to heaven soon, I will come back and I will get to see the whole planet and I will get to do all kinds of things I wasn't able to do while I was here. I do believe that.
Jonathan Sharks is a staff writer at The Ringer, where you can read his essays, including the one titled, Does My Son Know You? John, I really appreciate you making time to talk with us about this, and I wish you good health, and I wish you a miracle if it's possible.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. And like I said before, like I grew up listening to NPR, so it is pretty cool to be on the other side of it right now. So thanks again for the opportunity.
You can like our page on Facebook. We're on Twitter at KERA Think, and the podcast is available where you get podcasts. Just search for KERA Think. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.